Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
For most of us, marathon season is a time to hide in the stationery cupboard while Pauline from accounts shakes the tin for our local donkey sanctuary.
Money for the donkeys. Go on, bit of cash, bit of change in your pocket.
But things were a little different in the old days. They drank rat poison, got chased by wild dogs, and flogged false starters.
Goodness me! I've never seen anything like that anywhere in world sports.
Buckle in for marathon madness. Welcome back to The Upshot. My name's Jack Rivlin, and joining me for this celebration of human endurance are two athletes in their physical prime. They're fit as a butcher's dog, Zachary Sweeney Lynch.
Hello, Jack.
Hello. I'm Mr. George Cooper.
Hello, mate. You're right.
Hello, guys. I should say to listeners that we are sitting here, we're having some beers, we've got some mini eggs. Have any of us ever run a marathon?
Most certainly not. I've never come close.
What's the furthest you've ever run?
Zach, I'll let you start.
I've done a half marathon before.
Okay.
Not an official one, but just by myself around the park.
Oh, right, okay. So a BMI.
Nobody was checking.
Or was your time good?
It was decent. 1:46, actually.
Right. That is very good.
Yeah. I sort of see myself more as a sprinter.
That was quite a while ago.
I can tell.
More in the sort of 100-metre mould. Yeah. So yeah, obviously we are going to be passing judgment on some people who have completed a Herculean task, but with like quite a lot of mental obstacles against them, because we're going back in time, aren't we, guys?
Oh, we're going right back to the start. We're going to like 490 BC to be precise.
So this will be the furthest back we've ever gone, yeah. And probably ever will do, unless we do sort of, you know, the cradle of civilization. We'll get there at some point when we're scraping the barrel. So just to explain what we're talking about today, because obviously it was the London Marathon this weekend, we are going to talk about some of the maddest marathons in history, with a particular focus on the early modern ones where things get pretty weird. It's an absolute mental story, actually, what they all went through. And then we'll talk about a bit more sort of general marathon madness too. Shall we fire the starting gun?
let's jump in our time machine and fly all the way back to ancient Greece, because that is the origin. That is why we run marathons today. It's a story from Greek mythology. So it's 490 BC. The Persians are invading ancient Greece and they're at war with the Athenians at Marathon.
Yes.
This is the Battle of Marathon, of course. And the war is going pretty well for the Athenians. They're vastly outnumbered. They've got like 10,000 soldiers. The Persians have 40 or 50,000, but they've got the high ground. It's all going really well. And they're on the brink of victory. And one of the Athenian generals decides to send a messenger back to Athens to report on their impending victory. So this guy jets off and they're like, all right, you better get there pronto, because like they need to know. So he runs all the way back. It's 26 miles. Gets there, delivers this joyful message that war is over, and then collapses and dies on the spot. So he instantly becomes like the symbol of this war victory, and it's sort of, it becomes a legend. He's like, this whole story is mythologized. But I did a bit of digging on this story, and it turns out that that little jog was a walk in the park compared to a run done by another Athenian messenger earlier in the war. So just as like war was breaking out, the Athenians sent a messenger called Pheidippides to Sparta to try and enlist the Spartans to join their war effort against the Persians. And there's 150 miles from Athens to Sparta, and this guy, Pheidippides, ran it in 2 days, got to Sparta, and at that point he then had to convince them to join the war.
So that's like doing three marathons back to back.
It's like an ultra 2 days
in a row. Like a hardest geezer, that guy who's running Africa.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, not to diminish it.
Anyway, he gets there and sort of tells the Spartans, like, the Persians are coming and you should join us in this war. And the Spartans are like, all right, yeah, no, we fancy that one. But we will not join your war until the full moon. And that's another 6 days.
Was that like a religious?
It was a religious thing for the Spartans. Oh, yeah. So, which, like, you would think, like, the Spartans are famed for their bravery in battle. Like, surely has this not been an issue before that you can only battle on the full moon?
Surely if you were going up against them, you'd know exactly the time to strike as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Like full moon, yeah. New moon, in we go.
There we go.
Yeah,
sitting ducks, fellas.
I like that we're talking about this with the same tone of voice as like when we're talking about why England didn't win the 2006 World Cup, like John Terry sexting.
Yeah. If only the Persians had that intel on the Spartans' training methods.
So why is this guy not as famous?
So then, Pheidippides, he convinces them, but then they're like, yeah, we'll join you, but not for another 6 days. It's like, oh, fuck's sake. Like, so he's got to then go back to Athens and let them know that, like, the Spartans are coming, but, you know, they're just going to chill for a few days before they join. So he slept one night and then ran all the way back to Athens, another 150 miles back, and reported this news, and then chilled. It was fine. And then they eventually won the war. But later, this other guy delivered the message and died. So he became like this martyr of the war. And the stories, it sounds like the wires have got crossed a little bit. And Pheidippides sometimes gets named as the runner who did the little walk in the park from marathon.
And then keeled over.
And then keeled over.
So is it one of those where because he died, he gets to be the legend?
Exactly.
It's like 27 club, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems unfair. 150-mile round trip that's nuts.
300-mile round trip.
So
more than 10 modern marathon.
Yeah, and he did it in, what, 4 days?
Really
anyway,
good.
That is that was the origin. So obviously the Olympics in ancient Greece were a massive deal. Apparently, actually, they were a bit worried during this war against the Persians because nobody wanted to come and fight for the army because they all wanted to go and watch the Olympics, which was taking place at the same time.
Surely call off the Olympics.
You're
a war.
Yeah.
One of the most feared empires of all time.
A bunch of part-timers, these Spartans.
Yeah. So there were Olympics happening there.
There were Olympics happening already, but they didn't do the marathon. The marathon was never an ancient Greek
thing. So that's a modern Olympic.
Yeah, so that was only added when the Olympics were revived in 1896. And then they'd sort of, there was this legend of this messenger who'd keeled over. So they were like, great, that sounds like a fun sporting event. This guy only died after doing it, but let's get people to do it. So 1896 Olympics in Athens was the first ever Olympic marathon. And it was won by a Greek guy called Spyridon Louis, who apparently, with 6 miles to go on the race, somebody offered him a glass of cognac, which he necked and still won.
It's quite nice that a Greek won.
Yeah,
the first
they were delighted because apparently Greece hadn't done as well as they'd been expecting in the rest of the Olympics. So,
and was the marathon must have been one of the big events.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah,
didn't you say that they in the ancient one that if you did a full start they would
flog? Oh yeah,
they
would flog that. Yeah, that was in the ancient Greek Olympics in any running race, if you did a full start you'd be flogged.
Were they slaves? They weren't like, it wasn't.
No,
like
no, they were mostly soldiers, the ones who competed.
So your heart would be going before that started up, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Just one false move and you're getting lashed.
Yeah. I say bring it back.
Is flogging like that's it? What extent do you stop? Is it like flogged to death or just like?
No, I think
it's just like go again.
Probably more effective.
Just a light flogging.
Probably more effective than just disqualifying you if you do it twice. Yeah. Flogging hurts.
Yeah,
right?
You should be first time you get a second chance. Second time flogging. Third time disqualification.
Yeah, okay.
Fourth time execution. You should get sent to the.
I wonder
line.
If that's why they have the starting gun now.
Yeah. What was a sort of threat?
Yeah.
You just get
well, anyway, sorry,
you just
we're
like, just get
like horses. Cheltenham the tent around the green tent.
I don't think they do that as punishments to the horses for not winning. Although,
just on the
they do flog them.
Cognac thing, do you think that would help or hinder you guys if you were running a marathon? If you were
well,
nearing
six
the finish
miles
line?
To go, can kind of see how it might be like a bit of a smoothener.
Yeah, I think it could go either way.
I think at the start it would just make me fucking sluggish, but I think with 6 miles still quite a lot, but like maybe the mile to go it might give me some extra juice.
Yeah, there's a modern day sportsman who uses that exact technique, Marshawn Lynch, who played for Seattle Seahawks.
What, he drinks?
Yeah, he did two shots of Hennessy before every game, cognac.
Really?
So there might be something in that, yeah.
What was his role? Was this NFL?
Yeah, NFL.
Is he just like clattering into
someone?
Yeah,
he's good
for that.
It's not long distance endurance.
Yeah,
but
if you're just like an attritional bit of cannon fodder. So we're in 1896 now.
We're in 1896.
People are drinking cognac. Is that a flex? Is that like Usain Bolt turning to the cameras and celebrating, or is it like a performance enhancing drug?
I think is this back in the day when water was not very high quality. Maybe that was better to drink.
Yeah. Well, we're going to come on to a bit more alcohol.
Yeah, there is more booze coming up.
So, like drinking mead in medieval London.
Yeah, a bit like that. I didn't run many marathons then, though.
Nah.
So 1900 Olympics is in Paris. They do the marathon again. Doesn't go real well. For some reason, they start it in the middle of the afternoon. It's 39 degrees. only seven runners finish. But that is nothing compared to 1904. So the 1904 Olympics were held in St. Louis in Missouri. It was actually supposed to be in Chicago, but St. Louis kicked up a fuss because they were supposed to be hosting the World Fair at the same time and they didn't want there to be a clash. So Chicago is eventually like, all right, fine, fuck it, you can host them both.
And what, the World Fair is like a big exhibition, isn't it?
Big exhibition, yeah, where they did quite a lot of very questionable anthropological displays, which I'll come on to a bit later. But this Olympics, though, so there were only 12 nations that took part in it. 90% of the athletes came from the US and Canada. So not that much of a
What's the point?
Do you want to know why?
Why?
I'm glad you asked that, George, because it was actually down to the 1904-5 Russo-Japanese War, which had kicked off around that time, which meant that a lot of European countries were reluctant to travel.
What, the Europeans wouldn't go either?
Yeah, apparently so. I didn't dig very much into that.
There was a lot of war at the time. Yeah, yeah, Boer War as well. Probably finished.
Might have fought Full Moon or something. Didn't want to compete.
Yeah. It also lasted for 5 months, that Olympics, from July to November. There were some pretty impressive feats. So there was an American gymnast that won 3 gold medals despite having 1 wooden leg.
What? Wow. Yeah. And gymnast?
Gymnast, yeah.
What?
Is it the one which is just dancing with ribbons? You know the one I mean. How's that sport?
Trying to think of what gymnastic event would be. It would be a benefit to have 1 leg. Maybe the pommel horse.
I knew you were going to say pommel horse. It's just a great word.
Pommel sort of horse. Like one half of everything out of the way.
If you've got did you say a wooden leg? Was it wooden?
One wooden leg, yeah.
It was probably, makes you quite agile, like spinning round on your bum sort of thing.
Yeah. It actually doesn't say anything about whether he had another leg, like a working leg.
Oh, just maybe that'd just be really impressive. To be fair, it's the one where you're holding the hoops. It's just less weight to carry.
True.
Yeah.
Unscrewed kind of leg. Cheating.
Maybe a bit of advantage.
But that gymnast's achievements pale in comparison next to the utter madness and downright danger of the marathon. So the marathon covered a 24.85 mile course. This is like before they'd standardized the distance, and it went over 7 enormous hills. It was traced these dry, dusty trails. Apparently, like the dust was an inch thick at some points. And they again, for some reason, decided to start the race at 3 p.m. So it was 32 degrees when they started.
St. Louis, famously humid as well, unbearably.
Yeah, you're basically in the south.
Yeah, yeah. That must have been hell.
I don't know why. Just started in the morning, guys.
This whole event sounds like a shambles. It went on for 5 months.
Yeah.
It's like no forethought has gone into
You haven't heard the half of it yet.
Strap in.
So the runners were led around the course by a fleet of automobiles, which had just been invented. So they're pretty excited about them. But the roads being so dusty, these cars kicked up a toxic cloud of dust and exhaust fumes that the runners were breathing in for the whole race. So one runner already dropped out. They did like a circuit of the stadium before heading off on the main course, and one runner already dropped out. He like collapsed vomiting before he'd even left the stadium. That was the reigning champion of the Boston Marathon. So right. This wasn't just some like average bloke. He's one of the favourites.
He's lucky he wasn't doing it in ancient Greece, otherwise he would have been flogged as well.
Yeah, right. So yeah.
Was like keeled over vomiting, just lashing it. Another guy, a Californian guy called William Garcia, inhaled so much road dust that he had a stomach hemorrhage and nearly died. So he was discovered a couple of hours after the race had finished by some race officials just like halfway around the course. He'd started like coughing up blood and then passed out and they just found him.
Because I guess there are whole stretches where there's just no one around as well. Yeah, you're like in the wilderness.
Yeah. Sort of like a dying, like a huntsman stalking a dying
deer. Dying buffalo, yeah.
Just puts a trail of blood and gravel. It sounds like something like a Mad Max. I'm imagining. It's like sort of Mad Max wacky races kind of.
Yeah, well, it sounds grim enough, but the race organizer and chief of the Olympic Games, a guy called James Sullivan, decided to use the marathon to test out his purposeful dehydration theory. So he had this idea that taking on liquids whilst doing exercise was detrimental to your performance, that it would like upset your stomach and you'd go slower. So he decided that there'd be only one water point on the entire course.
What, 25 miles?
25 miles in like 32 degree heat in like dusty, on dusty roads.
Oh, well, just so they would go faster by his theory.
Yeah, that was his theory.
It's like applying the same sort of logic that F1 cars have is obviously the more fuel you've got, the more weighed down you are. So yeah. I mean, it's utter. Also, it's so flawed, because if he's thinking purposeful dehydration, why is he allowing one water point? Like, he must.
Yeah,
he recognizes that
human beings require water.
Maybe just to flush the dust out.
Yeah. If you're only allowing so little water, then that combined with the dust would form a kind of paste, which arguably is even worse.
Yeah, he's a pretty sadistic guy, I think.
Or just a sort of mad, like, Victorian scientist.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to have seen him test it out himself.
No, you guys, after you.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, they tried this purposeful dehydration theory at Primavera 2021 that I went to. There was literally only one fountain for the entire festival, and there was like 120,000 people in the Barcelona heat.
Wow.
And the only other place that you could get water was the bars, which they charged like €6 a can for, and there were huge queues because it was so understaffed because it was post-COVID. Mm. So people were in the crowd just dropping like flies because there was such big. So I remember watching, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Nick Cave or something. And like, there was just Spanish people just collapsing like all around because they just completely dehydrated and like really? Fucked.
But yeah. You move around the festival fucking fast though. Yeah. Without all that water on board.
Didn't miss a single act.
That queue, it did move.
That's great. So among the competitors was a Cuban postman called Felix Carvajal. So Felix had raised money for his trip to America by running across Cuba doing like running exhibitions. He eventually made it to New Orleans, but after arriving there, he lost his entire savings on a game of dice and then had to walk and hitchhike the last 700 miles to St. Louis. On the day of the race, he turned up wearing a beret, street shoes and long trousers, and eventually one of the other competitors took pity and helped him to cut the trousers into shorts.
So they're just wearing like work shoes, I guess. They don't really have trainers.
No. Right. There's a very funny picture of him in his beret. She reminds me of there's a picture of the Bolivian team, I think it is, at the 1930 World Cup, where they're playing in berets in the World Cup.
I mean, it's a look.
It is,
I'd
yeah.
love that if, yeah. if
bring it back.
Yeah. Do you remember that? I think it was the 2002 World Cup where I think it might have been Senegal. It was definitely one of the African teams had sleeveless shirts.
Oh, yeah.
That was
sick.
Vibe.
I always read in, like, when I was a boy and I read, like, weird World Cup annuals that were written in the 60s and might have been a bit racist.
that India tried to enter the World Cup a few times in bare feet and weren't allowed to play because they refused to wear shoes. But it could have just been the racist annual.
God. Imagine modern day John Terry with his 4-inch studs just crunching through some poor guy's foot. Yeah.
Right, so anyway, this Cuban guy's in his beret.
He's in his beret. He's a fan favourite, apparently. So he's as he's running around, everyone's like cheering him. He's stopping to have conversations. People are giving him peaches. He spots a little orchard by the side of the course and decides to have a snack. So he goes over, picks an apple, eats it. Turns out the apples are rotten. So he then gets stomach cramps and has to retire for a nap in a ditch. Still finishes fourth, though.
He has the nap in the ditch and then wakes up
and just carries on, which... It's a bit like the tortoise and the hare.
Yeah. This is literally like a cartoon.
Yeah. It's like,
how long would you nap for? Just in a ditch.
I think it tells you more about the other competitors that you managed to...
It seems like it wasn't about how fast you could do it. It's just like, can you finish?
Yeah.
Pure wacky races,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The marathon also saw the first black Africans to compete at the Olympics. Len Tanyane and Jan Mashiani from South Africa. So they'd actually been brought over for an exhibition about the Boer War, and they'd then been drafted into the World Fair for an anthropology, in inverted commas, exhibit at the fair. So these fairs were like, it's a pretty barbaric early 20th century idea of anthropology, where they basically got people, like indigenous people from European colonies, over and got them to perform like what they thought were like traditional dances. And James Sullivan, same guy who's testing the purposeful dehydration theory, also thought it would be a great idea that they'd, as part of this Olympics, have a few sort of spectator events, including mudslinging and climbing greased poles, right, that they'd get these indigenous people to take part in. So this is a dark episode of history, really.
I think I'm getting James Sullivan's vibe.
Yeah, he's not the hero of this story, I'll tell you that. Anyway, Len and Jan ended up finishing 9th and 12th, which is very respectable.
Respect.
Len though could feel pretty hard done by, because he was chased a mile off the course by a pack of wild dogs.
It was a detour. Yeah. It's going to mess up your rhythm as well, having to sprint away. Yeah. Just doing an unexpected mile-long sprint away from
a pack of rabid dogs.
Of course there's a pack of wild dogs.
Oh, dear. It reminds me of, do you ever play like those video games like Red Dead Redemption or something? And it's just like live action, will encounter, like, I don't know, a crocodile or something. You'll eat something and then you'll be poisoned. It's reminding me a lot of this.
We needed some bandits to
or someone to be squashed by an anvil. Yeah.
Fall into some quicksand.
Anyway, moving forward in the race, the first runner to enter the stadium where the race finished was an American guy called Frederick Laws. And he was, you know, he was the home favorite. The American crowd was going crazy. And he crossed the finish line and was like collecting a bottle of champagne, posing for photos with Alice Roosevelt, the daughter of President Roosevelt, when a spectator piped up and explained that they'd seen him riding in the back of a car for part of the course. So he was then grilled on this and admitted that he'd, on mile 9, started suffering stomach cramps and then hitched a lift for 11 miles of the course and then hopped out to finish the last couple of miles.
Came clean,
cheeky.
He did come clean, but he later said that he finished the race as a joke.
Got you guys.
He had his moment.
He had Alice his moment. He met Alice Roosevelt. But with Frederick Lortz disqualified, the next runner in the pack was a guy called Thomas Hicks, whose profession was listed as professional clown.
Amazing.
Which probably makes him quite suitable to this race, really. Yeah.
Is he in costume?
He wasn't in costume, sadly.
Massive, great big trainers.
Yeah, he may as well have been, to be honest. By the last few miles of the race, Thomas was suffering with extreme dehydration, unsurprisingly. And he was apparently begging his team to give him water. They were like driving alongside and they were just flat out refusing. Like the only thing that they would do was dab his mouth with a damp sponge.
Could he not have got some water out of his spinning bow tie?
Hang on, did they have water on them?
They had water.
Or they were like, you know,
we can't hamper the experiment
must continue. While they kick dust up into his face.
They thought nothing though of plying him with a concoction of egg whites, brandy and strychnine.
Sounds like a sort of trendy cocktail.
Strychnine was a rat poison that when administered in small quantities stimulated the nervous system. So apparently
compressing
the world.
Shutting it down. That is basically a brandy sour with rat poison.
But anyway,
what's the point of the rat poison?
So this was used as a 19th century, early 20th century like performance
stimulant.
Yeah,
and does it work?
Well, it did help him to finish the race just about. So, according to one race official, when Hicks arrived in the stadium, his eyes were dull, lusterless. The ashen colour of his face and skin had deepened.
Oh, God. He's dying.
He's dying. He's ingested quantities of rat poison. So
he was unsurprisingly.
There's a picture of him.
Foaming from the mouth.
Yeah. Is he being helped there?
We're looking at a picture of him being... He looks almost like a corpse being supported along a dusty trail by two guys in suits.
Crying out for his mother.
Yeah. So along with stimulating his nervous system, this poison also caused Hicks to hallucinate. And as he was coming down the home straight, he was hallucinating. He thought that he was still 20 miles from the finish. So he tried to lie down on the home straight and go to sleep. His team eventually managed to pick him up and carry him, basically support him across the finish line, where he collapsed. His legs, apparently, he collapsed on the floor and his legs were still moving as if he was running.
So like a sleeping Labrador.
Again, quite cartoon.
Yeah.
Very.
Yeah. So he got the slowest winning time in Olympic history, 3 hours and 28 minutes.
I mean, pretty fucking good.
Still not bad.
In the circumstances. Yeah.
Considering he had a hallucinogenic nap halfway through.
Yeah. He was Yeah, he was then treated for poisoning by doctors. The rest of the pack, the survivors, gradually trickled in. But after the top three, after the podium came in, they stopped counting the times.
Closed the stadium.
Yeah. Can you imagine, like, you finish this horrific event and you come in and it's like, oh, so what was my time? Like, oh, I don't know.
Everyone's gone home, mate.
You've endured wild dogs. Yeah. Extreme dehydration.
Yeah.
Poison.
Quantities of road dust.
Yeah, I don't know, mate.
You probably passed one of your fellow competitors who's like coughing up blood with a stomach hemorrhage. And they won't even tell you your time. So in the aftermath of the race, the Post Dispatch, which was a local newspaper, called it a man-killing event, yep. And which is quite accurate. Even James Sullivan, the sadistic director, called for the event to be scrapped.
Oh, because they were like, this is too true to the sort of gladiatorial.
Barbaric. In fact, the whole St. Louis Olympics was considered such a disaster, the Olympic Committee decided to hold another interim Olympic Games in 1906 just to keep the momentum going, keep the whole like Olympic spirit going.
And just sort of say, forget about that thing in St. Louis, the weird welfare Olympics.
Yeah, it was.
That is mental.
How long did that secondary Olympics go on for? If it had already been going on for 5 months and it was a complete fucking shit show, surely the last thing the people of St. Louis want is it to continue. Yeah.
This was in Athens, wasn't it?
The next one was in Athens. I didn't know how to explain that very well.
It was almost like a rival Olympics, I think.
Yeah, I think so. They were planning to do it every 4 years as they do now, but 1900 and 1904 were such a fucking shit show that they decided to add an extra one in 1906 in Athens, where they actually knew what they were doing to try and revive it.
But it's not their first rodeo.
And I'm afraid that the 1908 marathon was similarly farcical. The madness just kept going. So 1908 Olympics were in London. And once again, they decided to hold the marathon in sweltering heat. So it was 30 degrees. And at the last minute, they decided to extend the course by 2 miles so that it would start outside the Royal Palace and then finish in front of the Royal Box inside the stadium in White City, where the BBC broadcasting house is now. Literally just had to tack on an extra couple of miles so that King Edward VII and Queen Alexandra of Denmark could witness the finishing line in the stadium. 55 people entered. Less than half made it halfway. So I think at this stage, it was still very much like an endurance event rather than a sort of who can be the fastest in the world type thing. And booze and strychnine, the rat poison, were still very much the performance enhancers of the day. So apparently champagne was the poison of choice in London. I don't know if that's just a sort of like Edwardian London thing. but apparently the scientific theory was that high sugar content gave you an energy boost.
Right.
Which I guess is, you know, for the last mile, I can kind of see it.
Yeah. I think the heartburn.
Well, we'll come on to what it does to them at the end. Apparently some of them were using heroin and cocaine as well. Because you could buy them over the counter back then.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't really see how either of those would help you run a marathon. Heroin?
Yeah.
Coke on the home straight, maybe. Just
very late in the day, literal last 100 metres, maybe. And the race was also sponsored by OXO, so the runners were being given basically cups of gravy.
Cups of Bovril.
They had Bovril as well, so apparently Bovril weren't the sponsor, but some athletes preferred it. So it's OXO and Bovril. So just gravy is your sustenance. And it's 30 degrees as well.
Also gravy and champagne.
And rat poison and heroin. Yeah. And there were 4 hotels along the route where runners could stop and wash. I don't know why you'd need to.
It'd be like a cooling station or an actual washing point.
All I could see was wash. I don't know, maybe swap your beret for a new one. Anyway, so the favourite was a Brit. He didn't make it past halfway. He slowed to a walk before the halfway point. And at that stage, turned to the champagne, because I think the champagne was kind of seen as a like
give you a
desperate
boost.
Move. Yeah. He turned to the champagne and promptly collapsed and was then overtaken by South African Charles Heffron. So Heffron had abstained from all the poison, the rat poison, the champagne. And with 2 miles to go, he was 4 minutes in the lead. So, you know, he's going to win, you'd think. But as he approached the stadium, because they wanted them to do, I think the final 8 laps of the track were sort of the final stretch. But as he approached the stadium, he accepted a glass of champagne. That's a quote. It kind of makes it sound to me like he didn't need it. He just felt rude not to take it. All right, I'll take a flute.
Stuffy Edwardian customs.
Anyway, the champagne gave him stomach pains, unsurprisingly, and he slowed to a walk and was overtaken by Italian Durando Pietri, who is the first into the stadium. And Durando, he'd been on the champagne, he'd been on the rat poison, and apparently when he entered the stadium, he was so out of it that when he suddenly saw all the fans and heard the noise, he like physically recoiled and nearly fell over.
It's probably on the smack as well by the sound of it.
It's going to be a panic attack.
Whoa, staggering in. And during the last quarter mile, he collapsed 5 times. At one point, he got up and ran a lap in the wrong direction.
Did nobody tell him?
I think they were trying to stop him, but he's like, it's so out of it.
He's off so much rat poison, it's hard to control it.
It's off his face.
Yeah. Also, I was wondering, does that mean you then have to do an extra lap? Or, like, are they counting it? Yeah. You minus one, then. And then at one point, he received a heart massage from medics. He does cross the line in first. There's this famous photo of him crossing the line. He's being supported by both a doctor and the race umpire, who's got his megaphone in hand, and he falls through the tape on the line and collapses. He's clutching a hollowed cork wedge, which apparently was the vessel you'd use to drink the rat poison.
Right.
So he's clinging to it. And apparently they also used to, they like the cork thing because you could squeeze it and it would sort of help them in some way. Anyway, he falls through the tape and wins. And this creates a huge scandal, particularly among Americans, because the second place guy, Johnny Hayes, comes in second. He doesn't have any help coming over the line. But the officials insist they only did it because they didn't want Durando Pietri to die in front of the Queen. Valid. Anyway, so Durando is stripped of his medal and it's given to Johnny Hayes. But in a moment of generosity, the Queen presents him with a special trophy, I guess, just for his courage and bravery. Charles Heffron, he staggers in. I think he comes third. He was the guy who was leading 2 miles to go
till
he touched the champagne. But he did name his son Marathon, which is a nice little touch.
Yeah. Weird name.
Yeah.
Marathon Heffer.
Yeah. Heffron.
Heffron.
Yeah, weird
Marathon
guys.
Heffron.
I mean, it's pretty mental that they just stuck with the rat. I think the alcohol and the rat poison, even if I didn't know about science, I would know that alcohol's not helping you.
Also, surely after what happened at the previous marathon, you would see, like, this guy was treated for poisoning and was, like, hallucinating and trying to fall asleep. Like,
but then I was reading up on this, obviously, this week, and apparently runners used alcohol as a stimulant in the marathon until the 1970s, which I find pretty mad. I think they would have learned.
Yeah, short-term gains. I just can't get my head around
the Lucozade.
Yeah, I can't get my head around the heroin.
Yeah.
Because like, they would have known the effects. Unless they're kind of approaching it from a, it's just an extreme sedative, so any kind of like pain that you're feeling, painkiller is just gone. But
maybe, I don't know what the sort of quantities were, but a light dose if you've got an ache.
Mm. How were they ingesting the heroin, do you know?
Intravenously.
Surely they're not chasing the dragon. Although, I really wouldn't put it past them to stop for 10 minutes. I'm guessing, I reckon it was like a drink, wasn't it, back then?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Sort of like, picturing like, you know, those jars of chloroform in The Simpsons. Yeah. Yeah, maybe it was like an opium tea.
And you go into a little tent, there's some Velvet Underground on. Some bean bags.
I don't know when the heroin, so apparently heroin stopped being sold over the counter in the 20s, so I guess. At that point, runners switched it up just to good old booze. But like the marathon was quite archaic for a long time. So the guy who won the 1960 Olympic marathon, an Ethiopian called Abebe Bikila, he ran it barefoot and he set the world record.
Badass.
Didn't he was like drafted in last minute, right? And I think the whole marathon was sponsored by Adidas. And because he joined late, so then went to Adidas and was like, great, have you got any size 9s? And they were like, oh shit, sorry, we're out of size 9s.
He's like, fuck it.
So just did it barefoot,
yeah. But how, is it not a lot harder doing it barefoot?
I mean, it would be, but I suppose if that's what he's used to, then. I mean.
He did it 4 years later and Puma sponsored him and he wore shoes and broke the world record and won again. So
he can do it
either way.
Yeah.
A real hero. But it's not all creatine injections and stem cells in your Gatorade even today. So there have been some people, admittedly at a slightly lower level, who have run the marathon with some odd performance enhancers. So the DJ Diplo, he took half a tab of acid when he did the Boston Marathon, which is pretty impressive.
Channeling the spirit of 1904.
Feels it. I guess maybe that could help.
I reckon of all of the recreational drugs, half a tab of acid would be
wild dogs turn up.
maybe there, none of this actually ever happened and they were just all on acids back in the 1904 Olympics.
Yeah. So we did a newsletter story on a baseball pitcher who forgot that he had a game, went on a huge bender and did like a huge amount of acid and then threw a no-hit game, which is like a perfect game in baseball. It's like super fucking rare. While completely fucked on acid. You should tell that story at some other point. It's mental.
They always tell me about the time my brother made weed cookies for Christmas. No. So he's got a bit of a he's got into a tradition of making them every year and giving them to everyone. And they were all out on the table. We were around at my auntie's place and they were like grandparents there. My my auntie's husband's mum was there, who's Jean. She's lovely. She's Joan, sorry. She's like 90 or 85 or something. And these cookies were all out on the table. And then at some point someone was like, Joan, are you eating the cookies? She's like, yeah, they're lovely. This is my second one. It was like, oh my God. Like, cause I'd had like half of one and it was like, that was
enough,
more than enough. That was more than enough for me. And she'd eaten two whole cookies. And everyone's just like, are you okay, Joan? She was like, yeah, I feel absolutely fine. And kind of didn't want to tell her. So eventually at some point, somebody took her back home. And she apparently, she woke up in the night and came down to the fridge and was just like necked like two pints of milk and then was talking to the dog.
For how long?
I don't know.
She took it well. She wasn't freaked out.
Yeah. No, she wasn't. I don't know if she's ever had that before. So
did you eventually come clean? Did she know that she was tripping, or did you just let her ride?
I think she does know now. I'm not sure if they told her straight away because it might have freaked her out.
Yeah, but, tell her off.
Yeah.
Sounds like it went quite well.
Yeah.
Because they all
could have gone worse.
When you eat it is intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of
there's no way of backing out as well.
Yeah. Joan, do you want to just make yourself sick?
Yeah.
That's a
Sticking her in front of a Moonraker or something. What the other Christmas film?
Yeah. It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah. Something gentle.
Yeah, yeah.
Besides Diplo doing his half tab of acid in Boston, there is probably my favourite example of someone poisoning themselves in the modern day, and that is Uncle Chen. So Uncle Chen was a 50-year-old Chinese runner who did the Qin and Jiang Marathon, so near Shanghai. Sure you're familiar.
Nice.
And he smoked a whole 20 pack of fags the whole way round and ran it in 3 hours, 28 minutes, which is pretty fucking good. For a 50-year-old smoking.
How many, sorry?
3 hours, 28. Same as that time in the 1904 marathon,
yeah,
wasn't it? I mean, I'd probably rather smoke 26 than go through what they did in St. Louis. But pretty impressive. Actually, according to locals, Uncle Chen doesn't even smoke normally, only for races.
That is mad.
Would that be helpful?
I mean, there are studies. Yeah. I remember an old PE teacher of mine, Pete Shepherd. He was a Northern Irish guy. He was fucking cool. He looked a lot like Robert Downey Jr. All the mums like really fancied him. But he used to like, we'd have a football game and he just wouldn't show up. And then like 3/4 of the way through the match, he'd rock up. This was on a Saturday. He'd rock up like bleary eyed, like unshaven, and be like, sorry, lads, I just had something that you just sorted out. And then it turned out he'd fallen asleep on the train because he'd got pissed and like all this kind of stuff. But he swore that if you smoke to a certain level, it increases your lung capacity and it's actually got like cardiovascular benefits.
Wasn't that like a theory during COVID? A lot of smokers were pushing that.
Wasn't that Shane? That was Shane Warne's theory.
Yeah, he tried to kill.
How did that end?
He did end up on a ventilator at the time, didn't he? Yeah, so he tried to kill COVID with six. But I kind of get it if you are a smoker, but Uncle Chen isn't a smoker outside of marathons. Anyway, it's worth looking up because the picture of him smoking while he goes around is great. Just a slightly older boy. Some competitors, though, have to gain their edge via other means. And there is a proud tradition over the years of people who have cheated in order to speed up their marathon times. So most famously in America in the 1980 Boston Marathon, Rose Ruiz became the third fastest woman ever. Unexpectedly, because she was just a complete amateur. It turned out that she'd burst from the crowd at the last half mile mark. So I think she literally didn't run any of the rest of the race. She was caught when it turned out that at a previous marathon, someone had seen her riding the subway through New York to cut out a big distance. My favorite of recent years is Jason Scotland Williams, a guy they call Faux Farah. So in 2014, Jason completed the second leg of the London Marathon faster than Mo Farah and just 3 minutes shy of the world record. And this was particularly fishy considering he'd taken 4 hours longer to run the race the previous year. So he more than halved his time. So apparently the trick, if any London Marathon runners are listening ahead of the big race, is near Tower Bridge. You can cut out a 9 mile stretch by jumping the barriers. And another year, a 69-year-old did the same and beat the world record. It's like, how are you hoping to get away with that? Anyway, Faux Farah, Jason, he got interviewed about it. He always denies that he cheated. And he said, nobody thinks maybe I just train hard. Nobody thinks maybe he paced himself through the first half. And when the second half came, he just let himself go. It's like, yeah, you've halved your time, mate. Another favourite, Sergio Mutsoening. He has a identical twin brother. Mm. And they would swap places with each other in the toilets at the marathon. Mm. So I guess one of them races to the next cubicle, cuts across the course, and then you just switch. So you're not actually cutting out any track, but you're just running half the time. Half each, yeah. They still only finished ninth, which I think is a bit pathetic. They did a half marathon. Apparently they were caught because they were wearing their watch on different wrists. Very eagle-eyed.
Rookie.
Is that like a whole sort of bounty hunter sport of catching these cheats?
I'd watch that reality TV show.
Yeah, I would.
It does make you wonder, though, how many of the world record times have been won but have been achieved by...
Isn't there some stat like...
means?
The 100-meter world records, if you count the ones with people who have been banned, 9 of the top 10 are drug cheats, and the only one remaining is Usain Bolt.
Oh, really? That's mad. Yeah. Mad stat, that.
Very fast, that guy.
Yeah. What would be your method of cheating if you were doing a marathon? You think of...
I do like the hop on the subway. If that option's available, to get on the tube, so you can sit down.
Quickly tap in.
Yeah, in the absence of a twin brother, I'm probably going for that.
A lookalike would be fun. If you managed to pull that off.
Mm. Popping out of the crowd at the last minute is quite a slapstick,
isn't it? Yeah, bursting through. Yeah. So many witnesses.
It would be great if you could hide out on the marathon course from the night before, like hide in like a...
sewer well.
Like a sewer drain and just pop out of the air.
Covered in shit.
Do you remember those shoes that used to be a fad in like the mid-noughties that had wheels in them?
Oh yeah, wheelies.
Yeah, perfect.
There you go, you could use them.
You don't have to speed yourself up. You can slow everyone else down. And that is what Morhad Amdouni did at the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. Do you remember he was the guy who knocked all the water cups? Every time he passed a water station, he would take one and then just knock all the other water cups off. One of the last remaining advocates of the purposeful rehydration theory. He claims that the cups were slippery and he was trying to grab them.
The video,
he did it every single water station.
It's like his whole arm just knocking all the cups off. He's definitely not trying to grab them. Got a couple of other just funny marathon moments for you. The winner in 2021 of the London Marathon, Cisse Lema, missed out on a 25 grand bonus because he slowed down at the finish line to wave. Cost him 2 seconds and he missed out on his target, 25 grand. Mm. Expensive celebration. Even if you survive packs of wild dogs, rat poisoning, your opponents knocking all the water away from you, there is one hazard which can still prevent marathon victory. I am, of course, referring to runner's diarrhea, or, according to Wikipedia, as it's also known, the Indian shimmy. Don't know why. No idea.
That's from the same book. It's from your 1960s annual again.
Yeah, I think old Sullivan might have written that. Yeah, I'm just going off Wikipedia, guys. Paula Radcliffe obviously famously fell victim to the shimmy at the 2005 London Marathon, where she had to mid-race squat down and do a shit. It's very quick.
I guess she do it in a running.
Yeah, shorts. I was watching a video of it earlier. Also, it's really funny. I kept looking for the video, and any Paula Radcliffe video you go on, the top comment on YouTube is just, "Who's here looking for the shit video?" It's got like 2,000 upvotes. But yeah, she just squats. It looks like she's next to a canal, and she just squats briefly on TV. She's leading the race.
It is funny that is the only thing that you think of when you think of Paula Radcliffe. She I was reading about her earlier. She held to the marathon world record for the longest, at least in female competition, the longest anybody's ever held the record. It was like 17 years or something, and yet all you could think of is her shitting herself in the marathon.
did a wee as well, didn't she?
Yeah, I think in another race maybe. I always thought the poo was a wee. Sorry, we're getting quite base here, but anyway, it was a shit. She blamed pasta and salmon from the night before, and she said, "I want to apologize to the nation. I had to stop."
I think massive respect.
Yeah, fair fucks.
You like train so hard for so long, And her mindset as like an elite athlete is I'm not letting anything come in my way. And I think fair enough.
Also, what else are you going to do? Yeah. She won, by the way. She went on
like,
to win.
Yeah, but like pull out of the race because you need them.
You could go to one of the cubicles. She did pull out the year before at the Athens Olympics. She got stomach cramps, which I think was something similar. And she pulled out of the race. Do you remember? And that was, it was like really unfair bit of commentary where the guy's like, how many more times are we going to have to go through this with Paula? It's like, what? I'm just a fucking commentator, mate. So I think maybe this time she was like, I'm not missing out. I'm doing the fucking poo.
Yeah, fair play, Paula.
Much like the mystery shitter at the Boston Marathon who... They decided to be a bit more discreet. They were passing quite a big garden, front garden, so they popped in and went for a shit behind someone's hedge. Unfortunately, the whole thing was caught on a Ring doorbell camera. There's a really good part of that video as well. You're watching the doorbell camera and a spectator walks in. I guess they'd seen them go in and were suspicious and they just sit and they just go, oh, fuck's sake, turn around.
Have I told you my story about the Ring doorbell camera grassing my little brother up? So... I've got a brother, he's 10 years younger than me. He's going to fucking hate me for saying this, but it's so funny. He was having a girl round for the first time without, you know, parents were out on holiday. And he was like, oh, I'm, you know, having this girl round, you know, I'm quite into her and stuff. Like, and I'm like, yeah, fair play, man, whatever. Go ahead. He was like, don't tell mum and dad, though. You can't tell mum and dad. I was like, yeah, no, I won't say anything. Don't worry about it. Anyway, next thing I know, pop up on the family group chat. And the mum's like, who's this girl you've got around, Fred? And then and then Fred messages me like, what the fuck? I told you not to say anything. I was like, I haven't said anything. I've got no idea. Like, no idea. And it turns out that she'd rocked up with the Ring doorbell camera. Mum and dad had got a notification from like the beach and like Studland, like, oh, Fred's got a young lady around.
Is there any way of disabling that?
I mean, I'm sure Freddie's worked it
taped
out.
Taped over the camera now. Yeah, yeah. Just a photo of your porch.
Yeah, it's quite funny.
Yeah, really good. So yeah, I'm not expecting anything that exciting at the marathon.
It's kind of, have you ever been, watched the London Marathon?
Yeah, watched a couple of friends do it.
Yeah.
One of my mates burst into tears on the finish line. It was quite funny. He was like hammering the ground with his fist. It was pretty funny.
It might have been
Is that just the strychnine clicking in? <Yeah.
laughs> Ventured into
trying
a bowel
to get into
psychosis.
Middle earth.
Yeah.
Is strychnine still used for any performance enhancing? Just
killing
trying
rats. To get hold of some.
Yeah, just for killing rats. Yeah, don't try that at home, please, if you're listening.
If we can get hold of some, I didn't mention this at the start because it's training's not going very well, but I'm supposed to be in training. My girlfriend's sort of dragged me into it. And we're meant to do a half marathon at the end of next month with the idea of doing a full one in November. Oh, so if we can get hold of some... Strychnine. Well, how do you pronounce it?
Strychnine.
If we can get hold of some strychnine, then for upshot purposes,
for a small donation to the Royal Society of Protection of Birds,
we just get you in the enhanced game.
Yeah, yeah. Will anyone be trying that?
I don't know. That would be quite fun. Actually,
in a way, the enhanced games is recapturing the spirit of 1904, where it's like it wasn't about everyone finishing and being really fast. It was like, can you complete this task?
Yeah. It's all about the taking part.
I almost think the hazards were deliberate to make it harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so also add an element of entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, it did sound better. All right. Well, good luck in your half marathon on the strychnine.
Yes.
I know a guy who can sort you out. So. Got any controller.
Got any links for Smack as well. Hit me up.
It helps apparently. All right. I think that's all we've got time for. Thanks a lot, George.
Cheers, mate. Yeah. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.